finance and revenue. Thankfully, we are, I don't know, thankfully, we are not doing reserve funds today and doing a completely different topic. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 211, and Steve, you were going to do a brief presentation before we get right into the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll talk about this bill just in summary. The bill does two things concerning the school equalization formula. As you may recall from the orientation, currently for disabled students, there's a cap of 11% on the number of disabled students, or IEP students, those with an individualized education program, that qualify for an extra one weight. If the district has more than 11%, then they have to go through the waiver process with the Department of Education. The bill increases that 11% to 12.5%. So fewer districts, those districts that have IEP students between the 11 and the 12.5% would no longer have to go through the waiver process. Those that were still over the 12.5% would still have the waiver process available to them. The other part of the bill deals with a high-cost disability student. Currently, high-cost disability costs are those above $30,000 per student, and that's a special grant for the costs above $30,000 for each student are eligible for the grant. Currently, that grant is capped at $12 million per year. The eligible costs are about $15.4 million, so districts at the last data I have are getting about 78% of their eligible costs covered by that grant. The bill proposes increasing the $12 million to $18 million per year, so that initially that would probably cover 100% of the eligible high-cost disability grant, and it would probably do that for maybe for a year or two, and then any extra money, if the full $18 million was not used up, would still be distributed through the regular formula process.
Just go right back into the formula.
Yes. And you have one run there that illustrates the change that would cause from going to the $18 million. Currently, $15.4 million is the eligible cost, so that would be start out at 100%. But this is data for 2006-07, so it's a year behind. I don't have data for 2007-08 yet, but it would show you the districts that are likely to be affected and give you an idea of how much.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Meyer? Eric Richards, Kent Hunsicker. And is the window open?
It's just cold in here.
It's just cold in here. We might, can we grab that door?
I'll let you go first.
Good morning, Chairman Decker.
Good morning.
Senator Monroe. I am Eric Richards. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education's Office of Student Learning and Partnerships. And I am here on behalf of the department today to comment on Senate Bill 211. As you already know, there are two main components to it, one that's related to the high-cost disabilities fund and the other involving the current 11% cap waiver. Both tie to one major theme in our mind, and that is a desire to better target state funding for special education students to districts that have relatively more of those students and districts that have relatively higher costs for those students. As you know, Oregon districts are receiving double weight up to 11% of the threshold. The additional state school funds that are available include this cap waiver fund and high cost disability fund. And as Steve indicated a moment ago, in both cases, the amount of money that's available has not covered all of the expenses or claims that have been put in by districts. The high-cost kids fund is designed, of course, to provide revenue to those districts who serve kids at $30,000 and above. And I actually had been given the figure of $18 million in claims, but Steve has 15.4. So let's add 15.4. We're still $3.4 million below what's been requested by districts for high-cost kids. And, of course, that's non-cumulative. It's just for 1 year, and if it isn't all spent down, it goes back into state school fund. But we haven't had that issue yet. It's all been spent each year. But many of the districts who receive these funds, under the high-cost kids fund, and there are about 40 of them that do, demographically tend to be larger districts that are located in areas that offer more jobs to families, greater access to doctors, specialists, and programs that may not exist in other areas of the state or to the extent that they are in those states. For example, Portland Public Schools, of the claims for the high-cost kids fund, got about 25% of those funds because they serve a lot of kids with severe needs. So they're getting a prorated amount that Steve cited to you earlier. And in this piece of legislation, we suggest that if we could increase that amount, we could cover those claims fully because they are to serve the most costly students with disabilities in the state. Now, moving to the 11% cap waiver, the Department of Education has been hearing from many stakeholders that the 11% cap waiver needs to be raised to a percentage that most closely represents the average number of kids on IEPs throughout the state of Oregon now. It's been at 11% for a time now. At our most recent Special Education Directors Advisory Committee, for example, several representatives very positively expressed their support for raising the cap from 11% to 12.5. And as you know, the collective district claims for additional weights through this cap waiver have steadily increased over time to where I believe they're in the neighborhood of $20 million a year right now. We just finished validating, verifying our 2006 special education child count figures last night at 4 o'clock. So I have the data from 2006. And according to that data, the rate of kids on IEPs compared with all students in Oregon is now 12.7% in the state of Oregon. Looking at those figures and the data that we have from yesterday afternoon, we have about 43 districts total currently who fall below 11%. 13 of those are right up against the cap. They're somewhere between 10.6 and 11. And we have 31 districts that clearly fall below the cap, and that's 10.5% or less. Those 31 districts serve only 5% of the total number of kids on IEPs in the state of Oregon. Raising the cap to 12.5% accomplishes a couple of things. And one is, of course, it's additional revenue for districts who have more than 11% of their kids on IEPs and have not fully recovered the costs associated with children above the current threshold. And second, little incentive in light of the data that we have to identify students for special education for fiscal purposes. Some districts receive a prorated amount of their 11% cap waiver claims, and the majority of districts, according to our data, are already over 12.5%. 103 districts already exceed the 12.5% cap. ODE special education compliance reviews examine identification rates to ensure that districts are not outside of the acceptable practice of identifying kids on IEPs. Districts are required by our office to correct their practices if they're found to be out of compliance. If corrections do not show a change in the identification rates, ODE is authorized now under the federal law to restrict the use of their federal funding through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act of 2004. A couple of examples of that would be if they are considered to be disproportionate in identifying kids with disabilities, we are required to not allow them to lower their maintenance of effort bar by 50%. And they are required to spend 15% of their total IDEA grant now on elementary, secondary education acts, what we would call early intervening services. And that's a long conversation, but the purpose is to intervene early before kids are identified with disabilities.
So you go in and audit, or the department does, audit and say I'm a school district and I say I have 13% IEP, you'll go in and do a selective audit to ensure that they really are IEP and qualify, and that's how you determine?
Well, every school district in the state is a part of a monitoring sequence that we have. We do them on a multiple-year sequence where one may be going through phase one of monitoring, another one might be in the corrective action stage, and so forth. But looking at their rate of identification is one of the components that we look at. We determine a level of significant disproportionality. And, of course, we have to listen to what the district says. For instance, if you're a rural district and you have only three kids on IEPs and one of them happens to be minority and identify with a disability, your percentages might be high, but there may be a reason for that. It's skewed. So after we've considered all of the reasons for it, if you are still considered to be out of the range, normal range of identifying kids with disabilities, that's when we can impose the sanctions. That's new under the federal law. We did not have that right until now.
Well, so that's my concern with going to going from 11% to 12.5% is that, and it's mostly, I guess, anecdotal, but you just hear that the incentive is for districts to just go get to that 11%. And the concern would be is that not every single one of those kids is actually is IEP, but the incentive is for that district to just get to the 11, and so if we bumped it to 12.5, it'd be interesting to see how quick districts just get up to that 12.5%.
Well, according to our data, somewhere above 90% of those kids are already in districts that are above the 12.5% cap. And currently the relief they get through the high-cost kids fund is prorated. So they don't recover all of their costs through the high-cost kids. Some of them, the waiver process looks at severity of disability and other factors. Some of them get prorated amounts on their 11% cap waiver. So if they identify it above that cap, and we already have 103 that are above it, and the percent of kids being served who are in districts under that is relatively small, they're not recovering all of their money above that cap, so each kid they identify would be possibly losing money.
Other questions for Mr. Richards?
Is he completed with his testimony?
Are you completed with your testimony?
I'll close out real quickly here. In conclusion, there are districts who could use additional state school fund revenue as they're serving the majority of Oregon's most severely disabled and most costly students. And for several years, we've been studying ways to better target state funding for special education to students whose districts have relatively more of the high-cost kids. And we've had internal controls that we've put in both the 11% cap waiver process and the high-cost kids disability process. For instance, we're doing a high-cost kids audit right now. And SB 211 represents what we feel is the best thinking of the people on our Special Education Director's Advisory Council, some members of our Special Education Finance Work Group, and other stakeholders from all across Oregon. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill today and would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you. It seems to me that unless you increase the amount of money that's available, all you're doing is just shifting the money around, isn't that? I mean, this money comes out of the state school fund, correct?
Correct.
That would be true if there were no additional funds put in for the cap waiver. The high-cost kids portion, of course, we're requesting, or the bill is requesting, that there would be additional funds put in.
But, Mr. Chair, but for the kids that are just on the IEPs, we're just talking about moving money within the state school fund from some districts that have fewer kids in these programs to districts that have more kids. It also is curious or interesting to me that when we set a percentage limit, all of a sudden nearly all the districts hit or exceed that limit for some, for whatever reason. My sense is we raise the limit, you're going to have the districts meet that next limit as well. And if you have almost 100% of the districts that are at the limit at the percentage, doesn't it really make no difference because the money's going to go to the districts where the limit is?
So, yeah, so I mean, that was the similar question. So what if you just keep the limit at 11% but bump the cap, which increases the dollar amount from 12 point, sorry, Steve, from 12 to 18 million? What would be the repercussions or if we just bumped the cap and didn't deal with the 11% to 12.5%?
If more money was put into the cap waiver, that would certainly be a helpful thing, because already we have the majority of students in Oregon being served in districts who are over the cap and have been over the cap for quite a while. And we have districts up to 18% identification, some of them, and a lot of them that are well over the cap, 12.5% that's proposed, 103 already over that. So that would be an option, certainly, to put more money in the cap waiver off the top of the state school fund.
Senator Brown, Senator George.
Yeah, currently, if they exceed the 11% of students on IEPs, they can apply for a waiver and get funded above that number. Is that correct?
Chair Deckert, Senator Monroe, that is correct.
And is that waiver process difficult, onerous? What's involved in that waiver process? And, you know, does it make a lot of extra work for the school administrators?
Chair Decker and committee member Senator Monroe, as Kent knows from being a member of the 11% cap waiver committee when it was first conceived, there were days, 3-4 days at times, 2 days sometimes, where people would get together in the middle of February and look at all of the claims and make decisions as a group. The group refined it over a number of years and got it to a point where they felt they had it defined well. And now it is entirely automated. And the two big criteria for being considered for it is that you, of course, have to exceed the 11% cap. And secondly, your total revenues cannot exceed your total expenses for special education. If you meet those two things, you are under consideration for a waiver. And then there are variables such as the severity of disability in the claim that are looked at as well.
Senator George.
Thanks. That was part of the question I was going to ask, and thank you for that. We've seen two conflicting numbers, and maybe you or maybe even staff could help me with this. I was told about a year ago, I actually still have the piece, the informational piece, and that it is possible to achieve 2.5 times or more for a specific child with a specific set of criteria. We also received, I believe it was in this committee, that it's a maximum of 2. Do we have an answer? Can you go beyond 2 with, for example, the waivers?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it's my opinion that you can't.
Okay.
the statute has certain weights that are to be considered in that extra 2 limit.
Right.
The question is whether pregnant and parenting are included within that 2 or not. The pregnant and parenting weight is in a different section of the statute.
That was the question I had right there.
And it's my opinion that it's not included in the 2 because it's in a different section. I haven't verified that with counsel, but if you did include it as a possible weight, then you could exceed the 2.
Okay. Do we know if that's happening? That was my question. Do we know if that, and I think it is happening.
I'm not aware if it is or not.
Okay.
Brian Reeder's on the move here. You're more than welcome to...
I'm not sure I have anything to add that Steve hasn't already mentioned.
Okay. Thanks. Steve got it. Senator Starr, do you have another question? So, Mr. Richards, the concern, I mean, I think you kind of hear it now almost universally, is, and I just don't know the process that, I mean, so you have the waiver process. How do we look at, how? I mean, you'd mentioned an audit, but I was just confused with how that actually functions. I mean, obviously the concern is that at district, all the incentives are to get to that 11%, if it's 12.5%, to get to that 12.5%. And I guess we would want, if we're going to bump the cap, some assurance that a hard look is taken, and Kent might have good information, having been an administrator of a district, as to how you can go in and really check a district and see if these kids are actually, are they qualified, or are they just part of getting to that 12.5 if we bump it to 12.5?
The audit I was referencing, Chair Deckard, committee members, is the audit that we're now doing on the high-cost kids fund. Since it's a relatively new fund, this is the first time we've done an audit on that. The rest of the data that we have is submitted through certified audits that are turned into the Department of Education. In our office, we also do audits on maintenance of effort to make sure that the special education expenditures that the local district spends on behalf of their kids in special education and the ESDs on behalf of kids in their district is being maintained at the same level each year to meet federal requirements.
Does someone actually go out and do, and I guess you just do it, random sample would be the only way, and go out and look and say, yes, this child was deemed, is deemed correctly in terms of the school funding formula as IEP, or?
In our monitoring system, we do file reviews and conversations with staff, and were we able to, through the rates of identification, through reviewing records, through talking with parents and people at the district, detect that corrective action would be required?
So, yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Senator George.
Thanks. A few years ago, I believe it was 2000, when I was chairing general government, we had a series of hearings. Becca, I actually think, was in this room before it was remodeled. And was on special ed and the lack of funding thereof, and particularly districts in which children were not receiving the services the federal government said you shall provide. The interesting thing was is that one of my districts thought I was after them, and they came up with $1.5 million and put it over in for special ed. The interesting thing was, my thought was, why didn't you do that before? And I wasn't even aware that they had it. Do you monitor to make sure if there's a deficit in providing, you know, the proper support? And they have money over here. Can you say to them, it's time to move it back and get it to the needs of those special ed kids?
Chair Decker, committee members, our monitoring process is more programmatic to look at the compliance with state and federal laws for providing special education. Fiscally, the audits that we do have to do with whether they're maintaining a commitment to funding at the same level for special education with general funds from one year to the next, and whether they are submitting legitimate claims under the high-cost kids funds.
We're asking 10 different ways. Kent Hunsaker.
Good morning, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. Actually, the testimony I'm going to give may respond to some of your questions because, I believe when you look at the way that special education is funded in the state, there's three pieces that fit into place. They've all been talked about. The first is that there's a double weighting for up to 11% of your population if you have them identified. The second is that there is an application process for additional funding beyond that for students above the 11% cap. And about the last one I saw was $22 million is distributed in the second piece. And the third piece is a high cost. I'm Ken. Not very long. I'm Ken Hunsaker. I'm the executive director of COSA, and I live here in Salem. And I'm sorry for doing that. 11% cap, double weight, application process for students above 11%. $22 million distributed last report I saw, and then the high-cost disability fund, which is currently $12 million a year, 24 for the biennium, and this legislation proposes that that go to 36. What I like about our present process is that it targets the last two target money to those folks that have higher costs for students. And if you look at the combination of the two, right now it's $24 million and $22 million. That's $46 million. It's kind of interesting that if you were to raise and double weight 12.5% to 12.5%, that the total amount of money would be close to that. And if you raise it to 36, it's probably going to be very close to it. In other words, take 12.5% and the number of kids there, the total amount of money would relate to the three pots I'm talking about. The thing about these three pots is that it targets money to where it's needed. I've not been in favor of raising the 11% cap. I know that there are districts out there that like to see that, and there are districts that are above 11%. There are also a lot of districts out there that would not like that to happen because they're below. And if you have a run there, is that what the run is? It will tell you the winners and losers. And whenever we fool with the formula, we have winners and losers. And that's the problem with it. I really like the idea of targeting money to where it's needed. And you have two ways to do that. Applications for above 11% cap and the high cost disability. One thing that I would say about the high cost disability is that you have a report now that says that gives you 80 cents on the dollar. If you raise it to 18 million, it'll give you 100% funding. One of the components of the state school fund grant that we keep in mind is that you do not want to encourage spending. When you have 100% funding, you do that. Folks could say, well, I'm going to spend more money on this kid because it's not going to cost me anything. That has a tendency then over time, all of a sudden it won't be 100% anymore. It'll be less. I mean, I like the idea of it being somewhere around 80 or 90%, to be honest with you. I think that it requires folks to really think about that spending. So the combination of the three, I think, serves you very well. And, you know, I've also seen a printout that says that there are some districts that are receiving the combination of those three sets of funds, and they receive more revenue than they spend on special education. So there are folks right now that, according to audits, are receiving more money than they would spend on special education. There are districts on the other side of that also, and our two largest districts happen to be in that case. Portland spends quite a bit more on special ed than they receive, and Salem spends quite a bit more on special ed than they receive. Both of those, I'm not sure if Portland's at 12.5%.
13.25.
So both of those, I know Salem is. Both of those would benefit from a raise to 12.5%. They will also benefit from raising the high cost disability fund to $18 million, and quite a bit of the money would go to those districts. So I come to speak in favor of what you have going right now. I believe that it works pretty well, and and I think that you will find no doubt that if you raise it to 12.5, you'll be here in a couple of years saying it's now 13.5 or 14. Should we raise it to 13.5 or 14?
Okay, so that last sentence is very interesting. Questions for Kent before I... I think we're all going to have the same. So the obvious question is, why don't we just keep it at 11%, have the waiver process that Senator Monroe mentioned, at least then the school district has to come and, I believe, explain why they're over, who these students are. To me, it just provides a check. You would know a lot more about this than certainly I, because you were administrator of a school district. But to me, when you bump the cap, the incentive is just to do exactly what you said in the last sentence, which is to get to that cap.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, I've served on the 11% cap committee since its beginnings, and so we were the ones that developed the formula for it. The formula itself, I think, probably needs to be reviewed. I think it's time for it to be reviewed. Because at the time we developed that formula, we didn't have the high-cost disability fund. It's the main reason I believe it needs to be reviewed. But you're exactly right that there's an application process. Number one, no money is distributed to people that are not spending money, which is good. And if you raise it to 12.5, I think you could affect some people in that fashion. In other words, they would get more money through the formula, but they wouldn't be spending it on special ed. And so, you know, the combination of the three, like I say, it works pretty good. I like the idea of targeted money rather than overall granting of percentages. And I think what you have set up with the three things does that job pretty well. It targets money to those places that need it. And I think we could really look at some of the districts that are still spending it quite a bit more and are not receiving that, and figure out ways to deal with the targeting of money rather than an overall 12.5%.
Senator Burke.
Can you think of any way that you might be able to target districts that you know are higher and remove the administrative complication of having them apply over and over? In other words, to have two different kind of caps for high-cost districts like Portland and Salem or others that might be in that category that would not result in money being spent that was supposed to be for special ed. Can you think of any way to do that?
No, Chair Deckert, Senator Burdick, actually the application process, there isn't an application process for the 11% cap. Everybody's automatically...
I understand that, but if you were, would it be possible in a administratively simple way to have basically two caps, the 11% cap and then some higher cap for districts that you knew were going to legitimately need that higher cap?
Again, Chair Deckert, Senator Burdick, I believe that that's what you have in place right now with the three funds, that you have an 11% and you have two more ways to direct money to those districts that have high-cost issues, and they are the 11% cap process and the high-cost disability. Could something else be developed besides that? You know, maybe. But those are the two that are in place, and I think they work pretty well. And I would agree that the high-cost disability is probably a little short of where it should be. I'm not sure the $18 million, which takes you above 100%, is really good, but I think it could be higher.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Yes. I really kind of resonate with this idea of not raising the cap across the board. And really trying to target the districts that I can see Senator George nodding his head. I must be on the right track. Huh?
That's why I told that $1.4 million story. Because they found the money. It was there, and it wasn't going to special ed. So I think the scrutiny of the three projects.
We have to look at the formula. So
beneficial.
Yeah. Of course, where I will probably differ in some regards is I just think this. You know, the fact that districts are doing this points to the fact that we need to better fund our districts overall, not just special ed. But that's been an ongoing concern of mine in my whole career. So thank you.
I have a question as it relates to the run that we have. Does this run incorporate raising the 11% cap, or is this just the... I mean, it looks like it's just the high-cost disability grant.
Mr. Chair, Senator, sorry, it is just... raising the 12 to the 18 million. Doesn't include anything on the 12.5%.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for this panel? Yes, Senator Monroe.
Well, for Mr. Meyer, why do most districts lose money then with this change?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, you can see from the run that there are districts that qualify for the high-cost disability grant, but under the change to $18 million, come up short. The reason is that they are marginally above the $30,000. Every district is contributing to the increase from 12 million to 15.4 million. So even those districts that benefit from the high-class disability change are contributing something. They're not getting back as much as they're contributing for those who qualify for the grant but still come up short.
So these districts lose because you're taking $6 million that would be distributed to all school districts and distributing it only to the high-cost needs.
Correct, the $3.4 million, from 12 to $15.4 million.
Okay. Okay.
So 15.4 is the current need. 12 is where the cap is today.
Correct.
So why 18?
Now that data might be out of date, but it's a year old. But it's what I
Chair Deckard and committee members, the staff person within ODE who worked with the high cost fund at the last finance work group reported that we had approximately $18 million in claims. And 12 million that we allocated.
So 18. So. I mean, and I'm to me that's always made sense. I mean, we've been working on this for years and making changes here and there to high cost disability. And to me, though my district tends to be a loser on these, that just makes sense to fully reimburse high cost. Kent, you said it perfectly. Well, if we keep it at 11%, then it's just going to be the traditional waiver process, correct? And a district that will apply for a waiver will be granted a waiver if it's if it has the merits, and they will get every bit of the $18 million that is available. Brian's shaking his head no.
Chair Deckard and committee members, the $18 million is the high-cost kids fund. Currently, there's $22 million approximately. We're given a figure within the department to work with for the 11% cap each year, and currently it's around $22 million, as Kent indicated. That's the process where we would review the cap waivers that come in above 11%.
Just to clarify, Chair Deckard, I'm concerned that we're confusing the two programs. The 11% waiver program.
This little thing they gave me over
I'm sorry,
here.
Brian Reeder, Department of Education.
It's like a soccer ref.
The movement of $12 million to $18 million is for the high-cost disabilities fund. That has nothing to do with the cap waiver process. That's a totally separate process. So the waivers granted above the 11% cap are funded out of state school fund monies, not out of the proposed $18 million for the high-cost disability fund. Two different pots of money, two different ways. That's Kent talks about three pots of money. The first pot is those students below the 11% cap, within the 11% cap. The second pot is those waivers granted above the 11% cap. And the third pot is this currently $12 million proposed to go to $18 million for the high-cost students. So three separate pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do they? Well, I'm afraid I'm going to confuse it more. Any other questions?
I think legitimately we can have the discussion about moving the $11 million to $18 million for the high-cost disability kids, but I agree that the 11% cap maybe ought to stay where it is. I think it's separate issues, and they're both in this bill, but I think there's a legitimate need there, and that's outside of the formula. So
right,
it theoretically doesn't impact every school district. So hopefully we would increase the overall amount of money that goes to schools and also increase the amount of money that goes to high-cost disability kids, and everybody wins.
Yeah, not do that. I think you're voicing. Okay, thanks, Ken. Appreciate the time. Cinnamon Run.
A student on IEP counts double, right?
Two weights.
They get a double weight. And so what that actually does, if there's more of them, then it just plows through the formula and divides the amount of money that's available by more kids, and so slightly less per kid, you know. That's just the way the formula works. There's different weightings for different statuses of kids, you know, for example, kindergarten only counts as 0.5. That's something I'd like to deal with. But these IEPs count as 2. Now, is it possible for a student to be on an IEP and count as 2 and still be eligible for the other money, the extra, the high-cost disability money?
Chair Decker, Senator Monroe, absolutely. If a student qualifies for the high-cost disability money by being a student whose spending is above $30,000, they also get the extra weight for being on an IEP. They would also qualify if they happen to be in an ESL program for the extra half weight for that program.
Okay, but according to Mr. Meyer, no student's weight can be more than 2.
Chair Decker, Senator Monroe, no student's additional weights can be more than 2.
Right.
They get their first weight simply for being a
right.
regular student, so they can't be more than a total of 3.
Oh.
So it could be 3 times.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I didn't understand that. I thought the cap was 2.
I thought we just, yeah, that's what I thought.
Chair Decker, Senator Monroe, there has been confusion over that. The cap of 2 is for additional weights. But every student in the state gets what we call the first weight or the regular
sure.
weight of
sure.
1. So you get a total of 3. The first one plus 2, up to 2 additional.
So you could have a student on an IEP. That's 1 additional weight.
They're at 2.
Now they're at 2. If they're also pregnant and parenting, that's another additional weight.
No, that's the issue that Steve brought up. Is it's a bit unclear in the law whether that pregnant parenting falls under the cap of an additional 2 or whether it's entirely outside of it.
Well, how's that being applied is the question. I mean, are there students out there that are getting the 2.5 or not?
Senator Decker, until last year, we didn't collect student-level data, so we had no way of knowing that. But we do now, and we are in the process of looking at that data to see how much overlap there is between students on special ed IEPs and students who are being claimed for pregnant and parenting weights. So I don't have an answer for you today.
But the department now has all that data.
We now have the ability to determine that. In the past, we didn't because districts simply told us how many students they had in each category, and they didn't tell us who they were, so we didn't know if a particular student fell in both categories.
So I just think the logical question is, how do we monitor?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have a district out there saying, I mean, other than I think what Mitchell Richard said, where we look for where you have abnormal data that kind of, whoa, what's going on out here? And I'll pick mine, Beaverton, what's going on there? But I guess, you know, the obvious concern is that you would have, it seems like a system, now that we have the data, there just seems like there should be some sort of verification to ensure that, yes, they actually, where you have a 2.5, it really is a 2.5 weight, and how many of them are there, and if you need help with that, I think we're certainly willing to help ensure that the numbers are the numbers.
I'm not sure, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I'm not sure I ever got a full answer to my earlier question on how onerous the application process is for those districts that are above the 11%.
Chair Deckard and Senator Monroe, right now it's entirely automated. So they're simply submitting their fiscal reports to the Office of Finance and Administration each year by the chart of accounts that are given to them to report it by. And then that data is provided to us, and we're able to determine whether they spent more than they took in and whether they exceed the 11% cap or not. So they don't have to make an application or anything. It's entirely automated.
So the only thing you look at when they apply for above 11%, the only thing you look at is whether or not they, in fact, are actually spending that money on the handicap on the IEP student.
Do they exceed the cap?
Yeah.
And then are there combined revenues and expenditures. Are their revenues equal to or less than their expenditures? And if they're taking in more revenue than they're expending, then they're not eligible to get the 11% cap waiver funds. Because we're trying to target the funds to get to the districts that need the funding the most.
If they're okay, if they're taking in more money than they're spending on IEP students.
Correct.
Yeah.
Does that include federal dollars?
No, it's entirely a state school fund phenomena. Their area of responsibility, 320 expenditures for both ESD and for their district. And Brian, do you know any differently?
No, Chair Deckard, I believe that's correct. We look at the amount of special ed money they get through the formula, compare that to how much they're spending in their general fund expenditures to make that comparison.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Sounds like a pretty loose check to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the... Well, I think there's going to be an eagerness to see the data in terms of the 2.5 question or the three question. I don't know how soon we could see that, but I think there'd be a real eagerness to be able to see how many students are out there that are double-weighted, triple-weighted, double-and-a-half-weighted, who they are, where they are. But then the second part is just, to me, some system of checking, not just by looking at the books and saying, are they spending the money or are they not, but some better system at really looking at are, and that's why the whole 11% cap, I think all the questions seem to be around that, is who are the students that are at 11%, and when they do this waiver, to me, I actually thought it was more onerous. I'd want it to be almost more onerous so that the district really had to come out and prove. We have, I think if you're a Portland or a Salem or you have a hospital, you're probably going to be able to prove it. But to me, there's got to be a better way of proving it than just automated sending the data in and being approved because the data that the district sends along tells you that there's 12.5 or 13.5 or 14.
Chair Deckard, if I might clarify just a little further, and committee members, the 11% cap criterion that I just mentioned, the two factors, that's just for people to get in the door for consideration for 11% cap money. There are also variables, such as the severity of the disability for kids above the cap. So it's been carefully developed so that the money is being targeted for kids with the more severe disabilities that cost the most to the districts that are applying. And that's why some districts might get a higher level of reimbursement under the cap and others might be prorated more because they didn't have kids that were as severely disabled. And I do have a two-page handout that I could get to you that would completely describe the 11% cap process, if that would be helpful. I'd be happy to get that to you.
Sure.
The whole formula and everything.
Sure. Yeah. Senator George.
Part of the accountability, I believe, and this is what I ask. I want to find out if we're doing this. Back in those hearings that I described earlier, we found out from parents and teachers that some school districts were basically warehousing these kids. They would take them instead of trying to identify and meet their needs. They were literally putting them in a room and closing the door. Do we monitor enough to know whether or not they're delivering a quality product for these special ed kids? Because I think you guys know, as I do, we're obligated to provide those services at a quality level. Can you help me to understand, are we monitoring to make sure that those kids are actually getting a productive dollar into their classroom?
Chair Deckard, committee members, in addition to the systems performance review monitoring process that I talked about before, they clearly have to comply with state and federal law. We also have a due process complaint, mediation, and administrative hearing process here in Oregon, where if a parent feels that their rights have been violated under the law, they can file a complaint with the State Department of Education, and there are different ways to resolve that. a review of the complaint being one. Perhaps both parties decide to go to mediation to try to resolve it. And then the last step being going to an administrative law judge to review the facts. So we've got that system, our legal system for special education. And then we've got the systems performance review monitoring system, which looks at all federal laws that we're required to minimally comply with and state law and how the district is doing according to those laws.
Follow up on that. Yesterday we had our reporter training, you know, all the legislators, all the senators did. One of the things that we heard was that it could be within a matter of hours if you report a potential child abuse that somebody's on with that child and then possibly getting the police in to deal with the issue. The child may not go home tonight based upon that complaint. When we receive a complaint from a parent or a teacher saying, look, they're warehousing these kids, they're not meeting their needs, how fast before we get there to check it? And do we let the district know in advance, or do we just show up like they do at the parents' home?
When a complaint is filed under the law, we are required to respond within a 30-day period.
Response is just considering it or go in there.
To rule on the complaint. Now, the district is also notified if a complaint has been filed, and the parent is contacted immediately to verify that we've received the complaint from them. And then we have that period of time to review the facts and to talk with the parties involved and to make a determination on the complaint. And we respond in writing with the findings of the complaint and any corrective action, if needed, that would need to be taken within a certain amount of time.
Could I ask that question one more time? Do you physically go to the school, and before you go, do you notify the district? In other words, can you show up unannounced to verify whether or not that claim was correct? Because I think sometimes there really may be the tendency to try to make sure I'm ready when you get there, and I would like to have you guys going in into that school district and finding out what's really happening with the children at their level.
A part of our monitoring process for special education, it involves on-site work, Senator. That's correct.
Relative to the complaint?
A complaint we traditionally respond back to in writing.
This is what I'm concerned about. You can see where we are. It hasn't changed since 2000.
Brian, if it's possible, I think the concern you're hearing is just in terms of incentives, similar to the whole transportation conversation. Are the incentives in the right place? And then checks. What is the system to ensure that if we have the right incentives, if we've designed, and I don't know if the superintendent has, I know you have a lot on your plate, especially when the legislature's in town, but to me, helping us answer those two questions or bringing language, we could work on it, but I think it'd be great if the department at least and the superintendent had a position that yes, we think the incentives are in the right place and we think there are adequate checks in place. I definitely sense some skepticism in terms of both of those.
Chair Decker, we certainly can have conversations with the superintendent about that. As Kent mentioned, though, and you bring up the same issue with transportation, whenever you reimburse a district for their expenditures, particularly if you reimburse them 100%, you've provided absolutely no incentive for them to limit their expenditures. And that's sort of a problem inherent in reimbursement programs of any sort, not just those related to special ed or transportation. So in our efforts to get the money where costs are highest, we sort of have to accept the fact that maybe we're creating incentives that may encourage districts to spend more than they would otherwise. And that, as far as I know, there's no magic program that provides exactly the right incentives and gets the money to exactly the right place all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of program that we chose to try and get money to those truly high-cost districts, but at the same time recognizing that, the incentives to make the most efficient spending decisions may not be there.
Mm-hmm. So perhaps then you just you really work hard on the check side of ensuring that if that's you know if that's where we're headed, which to me I mean you can make the case on bumping the cap to 18 million and more fully reimbursing, but then maybe it's just the onus on us at the legislative level to ensure that we've designed a check system to ensure that we're getting all the data that we need, the department is, and that we're checking more fully to ensure that it is indeed, when they say 12.5%, it is indeed 12.5% are all IEP.
Yeah, Chair Deckard, I would agree with that. And, you know, the putting in place a check system or some sort of auditing system to make sure that districts are spending their money appropriately is one response to a situation where the incentives in the program are not what you would truly like them to be. Mm-hmm. Understanding that those check and audit systems are fairly expensive to run.
Yeah.
So that's the trade-off.
Yeah,
really.
Good point. Anything else? We kept you up here a long time, Mr. Richards, but that's been a good discussion. Any other questions or comments? Thank you
Thank
very
you,
much.
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Brian, for sitting in and coming up. Anyone else? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 211. Tomorrow, we have no committee on Thursday, I do not believe. And Paul, we didn't post, so it is fait accompli that we don't, which was the plan. So we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 416, which is around the historic property tax. And then we have a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 66, which is a Treasury bill. And I believe Senator George has amendments drafted dealing with the nature of the Secretary of State and the Treasurer's budget and who will submit those budgets. So I think we'll look at amendments on those. In three. What are
three amendments? The others are technical.
Others are technical on Senate Bill 66, and we're discussing SJR 8 and 3 most of the day today.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Could we have amendments prepared to 211 that delete the reference of the move from 11 to 12.5?
Let me just make sure everyone's nodding.
Pretty
and
simple.
I'd
I
like
think it'd be a pretty simple
like
amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, everyone.
And leaves the 12 to 18 million in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, so you delete everything except section one and then the reference in to section one in section four and then the emergency clause in section five.
So, Steve, any questions for Senator Monroe or anyone on the committee on?
The amendment would leave in the language to change 12 to 18 million.
Yeah, and nothing
and
else.
It would take out the language that would change the 11 to 12.5%.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the department may take a look at least letting us know how there might be a some sort of auditing or check. And the curiosity would be to other states. Has someone else have a more rigorous and hopefully cost-efficient system of just kind of randomly? That's just what I think of, but maybe there's a better way of randomly checking to ensure that who is deemed IEP is in fact IEP. Very begrudgingly, not a full shake of the head, but looked like a little one. great. Well, thank you. We are adjourned till tomorrow at 8:45.
If you go.